Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The makers of Super Shell gasoline invite you to Shell Chateau, where your host is that famous and beloved picture star, Wallace Beery. With...
That certainly excites me. But you don't know how happy it makes me that I'm here in the Shell Chateau. You know, I'm sort of supposed to be a master of ceremonies. I've got a little job sort of introducing the acts. If I was capable, probably, of doing an act myself, why, they wouldn't have selected me as master of ceremonies. You know, I'm supposed to be very, very dignified. You know, that takes a lot of work. But I'm not so good on the dignity. But even though I'm not so good on the dignity, why, we've got a grand program this evening, and I'm proud to offer it to you with the compliments of the Shell Chateau. They've got that wonderful singer, Harry Richmond. You know, Harry, he's internationally known on the stage and screen. We've got Mabel Stark. Now, Mabel is the greatest trainer of lions and tigers in the world. And then we have Professor Robert Wildhack. That's the name. He's supposed, of course, to lend a little educational value to the program. And incidentally, he was a sensation in the Broadway Melody of 1936. A little lady from Kansas City is a surprise of the evening. I'm going to tell you about her later. Also, Stu Irwin, MGM star. Stu and I are going to do just a short version of Viva Via. I'll do Pancho, and Stu will do the party play from the picture, Johnny Sykes. At least I know that Stu will be good. Victor Young and his orchestra, I don't think they need any introduction to you. So we're going to start the evening off with a great big bang, and I'm going to introduce to you that great singer, Harry Richmond. Come on, Harry.
Hello, Wally.
Hello, Harry. Folks, I think Harry ought to tell you himself about the special number he's going to sing.
Well, just a minute, Wally. Do you remember when I got my first real part in George White's Scandal?
Well, I sort of remember. Of course, I was just a little shaver. My mother, she took me in. I sat on her lap and watched, you know.
Well, shaver or no shaver, Wally, I'd like to take you back to those days with my own musical cavalcade.
Go ahead, Tut.
In 1928, in my first Broadway success, I introduced this song, which was played around the world.
They heard the breeze in the trees, singing sweet melodies, and they made that the sort of the blues. And then they nursed it, and nursed it, rehearsed it. And then gave out the news that the Southland gave birth to the blues.
In 1929, I had the pleasure of writing my first song hit, which I hope you will remember.
Muddy water round my feet, muddy water in the street. My heart cries out for muddy water.
In 1930, I went to Paris and came back with the inspiration for this song.
Fais-vous, fais-vous, fais-vous.
That means it's you, just you. And I have whispered adieu to the others.
Hey, 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 you.
In 1931, my very good friend Joseph M. Kent introduced me to the motion picture industry, and Irving Berlin gave me this.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where Harlem says? Putting on the wrist, bangle down upon a bevy of high brown from down the levee, all Miss Fizz. Putting on the wrist, that's where each and every Lulu Bell goes. Every Thursday evening with her 12 bows. Now the old boat, come with me, and we'll attend their jubilee and see the tender last to bed. Putting on the wrist. In that same picture, I wrote my autobiography in this song. Give me the sun, God, heaven above me. Show me that now, that one who will love me. And I'll travel along, singing a vagabond song. In that year of trying times, I searched high and low for a thrilling song and was successful in finding this. I love a parade, a handful of vets, a line of cadets, or any brigade. For I love a parade. 1933, it was my pleasure to introduce a beautiful melody that I think will live for many years to come. Don't I feel it in my soul? And don't I know I've reached my goal? Oh, sing me to sleep. Lullaby, lullaby.
I wish I could sing that way, but just so there'll be no misunderstanding, I don't want you to think that that was me singing. You know, he's going to break down in a few minutes and do another number for us. Now we're going to have another song from Harry Richmond. You know, it's the first time on the air. Trouble for my heart. Go ahead, Harry, and don't snore.
Lights are low and pretty music playing. Once again I'm pleading for your love. Darling, there's an old saying that fits you like a glove. A treat for the eyes, a thrill for the lips, a trouble for my heart. I'm never certain of my fate. You keep my heart debating. Is she really the one for me? Am I the one that she loves? Gorgeous, divine. As long as you are mine, my troubles all depart. But when we say goodnight, it's then my heart begins again. With is she really the one for me? Am I the one that she loves? I know that your name is in a thousand little red books. Your love is just a game that keeps me guessing. I never knew, dear, whether or not I'm in or I'm out. So what have I got? A treat for the eyes, a thrill for the lips, but trouble for my heart. I wonder if there'll come a spring when my heart will be singing. Yet she's really the one for me, and I'm the one that she loves. A treat for the eyes, a thrill for the lips, but trouble for my heart. I'm never certain of my fate. You keep my heart debating. Is she really the one for me? Am I the one that she loves? Gorgeous, divine. As long as you're mine, my troubles all depart. But when we say goodnight, it's then my heart begins again. With is she really the one for me? Am I the one that she loves? And I know that your name is in a thousand little red bulls. Your love is just a game that keeps me guessing. I never knew, dear, whether or not I'm in or I'm out. So what have I got? A treat for the eyes, a thrill for the lips, but trouble for my heart. I wonder if there'll come a spring when my heart will be singing. Yes, she's really the one for me, and I'm the one that she loves.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to present a very brief version of the motion picture, Viva Villa. Some of you may remember it. If you did see it, you surely remember Stu Irwin as Johnny Sykes, the reporter. And I can't tell you how happy I am that Stu is here with me tonight to help me in this radio presentation. Come on out here, Stu. See how the folks like you? Now I'm going to turn you over to Frank Nelson. He'll set the scene while I take off the coat and put on a Mexican dialect. Thank you.
Our condensed version of Viva Villa has been adapted from MGM's motion picture, which was based on a novel by Edgecombe Pynchon, with special research by O.B. Stage. It is the story of Pancho Villa, who saw his own father killed by the lashes of a brutal majordomo, and who became a few years later the most notorious bandit in all Mexico. But at the time our story begins, a great political idealist has risen to save the peons from oppression. He is Francisco Madero, and he summons to assist him Pancho Villa the bandit. And so Villa, at the head of his troop of crazy horsemen, is on his way to see Madero. But as he reaches the little town of La Concepcion, he sees the bodies of six peons hanging from a tree outside the town courthouse. He gallops up to the door, where he sees a young man in American dress.
Hey, gringo!
Hey, you mean me?
Yes, you here. What happened here, huh?
Oh, nothing much. These six lads have just been executed by order of the court.
The court, huh? What did they do?
They couldn't pay their taxes, so the judge gave them the works.
What are you doing here?
I'm a reporter, Johnny Sykes of the New York World. I'm covering this revolution for 6 million readers.
How many?
6 million.
6 million? That's a lot of people.
You're
well,
telling
Johnny,
me.
If you want some news for those people, you come along with me.
Yeah? Who are you?
I'm Pancho Villa.
Say that again.
Pancho Villa.
Pancho? Holy mackerel. Say, pal, I've been looking all over Mexico for you. Why, sure, I'll come with you.
All right. Sierra. Yes, Pancho. Cut down those bodies. You'll bring them in the courthouse.
We're going to have another trial.
Hey, Pancho! Pobito! Come on, quick!
Everybody, keep your seats. Keep your seats, you too, Mr. Senor Politico.
What is the meaning of this?
Now, wait a minute. Get the gun, Sierra. You put those bodies in the jury box. Set them up nice and comfortable so they can see everything.
Yes, Pancho.
Now, everybody, shut up. We're going to have a trial.
I am a servant of the government. I demand to be heard.
You condemn these men to die. Now they're your jury. You go on and talk to them. Dead men always listen.
I have done nothing wrong. I was only doing my duty.
Your duty? You hear that, jury? His duty.
These men were sent to me to be tried for that crime.
The crimes? What crime?
Quick! Give him the leash! Quick!
Here, they are written out in full.
That's too bad. I can't read. You read them to the dead jury. They've got ears just like you've got. Maybe they don't hear so good now, so you better read loud. Loud!
This is outrageous! I demand justice!
Oh, Sierra, Sierra, Sierra. Now, why did you shoot him? Why didn't you let him finish? Now you spoiled the whole trial.
I don't like. Take too long.
All right, now we hurry up. Now I'll tell you the law of Pancho Villa. It goes like this. 2-for-1, you understand? When one peon is killed, I kill 2 major domos are the best I can find. Just a moment, Sierra. No objections from the jury? No objections? All right, Sierra. You finish up. All right, my brave Dorados, on to Madero. Come on, Johnny, we get more news.
Come in.
I am looking for Madero. Who are you?
My name is Francisco Madero. I want you to help me free our people, Pancho, but not by looting haciendas.
How are you going to do it, then?
With armies, Pancho. Armies organized and disciplined, with leaders willing to submerge their own hatred in the cause.
Where are you going to get the armies?
Armies wait for us from one end of Mexico to the other. Armies without flags or guns.
That's not very good kind of armies.
That's the best kind of armies, Pancho. Come and help me call to them. You will see how they stand up out of the dust and how a flag over the heads will change them from slaves into men.
You make great dreams come in my heart. What do you want me to do?
I want you to take your men and join the army of General Pascal.
Pascal? I will be under Pascal?
Yes, Capitan Villa.
For you, I do it, senor. Adios.
Adios.
Pancho, we're getting near Pascal's camp. What do you figure you boys are going to do after you get there?
Well, we capture Santa Rosalie. We make Madero president of Mexico.
Yeah? Well, Pascal doesn't like Madero.
How do you know that, Johnny?
He's been stalling around here for weeks now, with his army eating up all the peon food for miles around. Hasn't been doing any fighting, has he?
That's not so very good, Johnny.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
You wait and see. Wait, here's Pascal's headquarters. Company, halt! How's that, Johnny? I sound like a real commander, huh?
You're great, Pancho.
All right, now I talk to General Pascal. Hey, you!
Hey.
This is General Pascal's tent?
Pancho Villa?
Good. General Pascal. Mr. Madera, he told me to bring my army up here. I come right away.
That's very good. You will make your camp outside of town. We are waiting for General Garcia to bring his troops.
How long we wait?
About 3 weeks, I think.
I don't like that.
Indeed. What have you to suggest?
I suggest that we go right away tonight, you understand?
Impossible. Santa Rosalia is too well fortified.
All right, then you stay here and I go.
My orders are that you remain in Potosí.
That's not the kind of orders I like.
I am in command here.
Not when I've got a gun in my hand, General. You give me orders I like. Fine. I do what you want. Otherwise, I do what I want. Goodbye, General Pascal.
So, you're going to take that army of yours and storm Santa Rosalia.
That's right.
May good luck attend you, Capitan Villa.
Thank you, General Pascal. You know, somebody told me you were a good general, but I don't think so. That's what. Blow the kid that toots the bugle. Well, blow the charge.
Where now, Pancho?
Now we take Santa Rosalie.
You better take it. I've already sent the story to my paper.
Oh, Johnny, Johnny. You'll be all right. Come on. We'll be at Santa Rosalie in 3 hours. You get everything straight.
You get it, Ben? A big one regiment. I'll wait till you get in, and I'll come in with the torches.
That's right. First, me and Sierra break in and stand around the north. Hey, Johnny?
What do you mean, the north? Didn't you see what I put in my story? I said you broke in through the south.
Oh, you can't do that, Johnny. There's a river. We can't get the horses through. Then there's a hill.
All right, then. But every paper in the United States says you went in by the south.
Johnny,
How many papers say that?
6 million.
6 million?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we go in by the south.
That night, Pancho Villa took Santa Rosalie. A few nights later, he captured Juarez, to the great disappointment of the traitorous General Pascal. A few weeks later, Diaz abdicated, and Madero was president of Mexico. But for Pancho Villa, a life of quiet idleness on a farm was difficult. He kept getting into trouble. One day, going to a bank to draw out some money, the teller refused to serve him because it was after hours. Pancho killed him, more or less accidentally, and helped himself to the money. 3 hours later, he finds himself locked in a prison cell.
Pancho.
Yes. Well, what do you want?
You have a visitor.
All right.
Ah, good evening, Capitan Villa.
Oh, it's you, Pascal, huh?
Yes, Capitan. And I regret to inform you that you are sentenced to be shot at sunrise tomorrow.
Tomorrow? When do you come?
This afternoon. His Excellency Madero was kind enough to ask me to see that justice was carried out. Is there anything special you would like for breakfast?
No.
Very well. I'll see you in the morning.
Guard, here. Here, come here.
What is it, Pancho?
You send this telegram to Madero in Mexico City, quick. Madero will not let Pancho Villa die. You send it, yes, please.
See, I'll send it. Pancho, it is time to get up, Pancho.
What?
It's 5 o'clock, Pancho. The firing squad is ready.
Madre Dios. 5 o'clock already?
Si, Pancho. Come along.
Good morning, Capitan.
Pascal.
Have a cigarette?
Pascal.
Do you...
I want to talk to you.
Do you wish your eyes covered?
Listen, Pascal. Madeira, he's my friend. Look. The ring he gave me. Madeira's ring. Oh, please, look.
Is the firing squad ready?
No.
Wait, listen. I don't want to die, please. It ain't time to die. Oh, don't shoot me. Look. Pascal. On my knees.
On your knees. Take aim.
No. Please don't shoot me. They need me. Madeira. Mexico needs me. I don't care about myself. But the revolution, it ain't over. Pascal, they need me.
Come here. No. Stay on your knees. That's it. That way.
Yes.
Come.
I come, but don't shoot Pascal.
That is a new way for Pancho Villa to travel. On his knees.
All right. I'm here, but don't shoot me.
You've touched my heart, Pancho, with your fine performance. I can't resist you. Here, look at this telegram. It came an hour ago.
I can't read.
It is from Madero. He says it is his desire that your life be spared. But as punishment for your crime, you are to be exiled from Mexico.
But I love my Mexico.
With Pancho Villa in exile, Madero's reign in Mexico does not last long. Surrounded by intrigue in his palace, he is murdered by a group of political assassins led by General Pascal, and Mexico is once more in turmoil. But Johnny Sykes, always on the alert for news, brings Pancho Villa back to Mexico. The magic of the old name raises an army in no time. And 3 months after he has crossed the border, he rides into Mexico City at the head of 60,000 men. And when he finally arrests Madero's murderer, Pascal...
Well, Pascal. Tomas. General Pascal, he is a big general. You will untie him, please.
Thank you.
It's all right. Don't mention it. You have a cigarette?
Thank you.
You feel pretty brave, eh?
I'm quite ready for the firing squad.
That's a very fine speech. He's better than I make.
You know, I think of you a lot of times. The whole world says Pancho Villa is a hero, a brave man. To you, General Pasquale, I'm just a man crawling on my knees. I was crying and hollering pretty bad that day, you remember?
Yes, I remember very well.
And I would like to apologize for what I did.
When a man is afraid to die, he does many foolish things.
I guess that's right. You know, I say to myself a lot of times afterwards, you really afraid to die, Pancho? And I say back, no. I tell you, maybe what it was, maybe because I love somebody. Maybe the little fellow with the beard, Madeira. Love makes you afraid, you understand? Maybe you love somebody. You got a wife, kids. Maybe you like to see your little kiddies again, huh?
You would like to hear me scream, huh? No. I am sorry to disappoint you. I don't beg. I don't scream. I'm ready for your firing squad.
Firing squad? Oh, Pasquale, now, who told you about a firing squad? Tomas, did you tell General Pasquale that we're going to shoot him?
No.
No, no, no. I got a better idea. You see the orange there on the ground? I throw him away 2-3 minutes ago. He's all covered with ants crawling.
Yes, what about it?
Well, the ants, they like honey better than they do oranges. You see the jar of honey here? He's very fine honey. He come from the same place where I crawl on my knees and beg. Maybe you like some
no,
in your ears.
No, no, that's not the way. No,
that's
no,
my
no,
way.
No, you can't. No, but you...
Take it
no,
away.
No,
give him
no,
plenty. Put the honey all over him. Put the ants on him.
Congratulates him for his resignation. Pancho, he says, if you could have been president on a horse, you'd have been great. And no matter what you've done, you quit like a man. Years have passed, and peace has settled on turbulent Mexico. Villa the fighter has become Villa the farmer, but his enemies have never forgotten, never forgiven. Paid assassins have waited for days in a house across from the butcher shop in the village where Pancho trades. Now, at last, the moment of the assassination is at hand, and Johnny Sykes once more turns up at a critical moment in Villa's career.
Hey, Pancho!
Oh, Johnny, Johnny!
Hey, how are you?
Johnny Sykes, why, what are you doing here,
yeah,
Johnny?
Looking for you, you big so-and-so.
Oh, Johnny,
hey, quit kissing me, will you?
I'm so excited,
well,
Johnny.
Cut it out. I'm sensitive.
How do you happen to be here, Johnny?
Well, just my usual Brooklyn luck. I stopped off on my way to Mexico City. Look you up. Get a story. Some more lies about that old desert Napoleon.
No, no, Johnny. No news around here. Nothing doing.
Well, never mind that. We'll cook up a few bird calls or something. Where's Sierra?
Well, he got drowned when he was in swimming.
Oh, that's tough. How about Tomas?
Tomas, well, he caught a cold with a fever. He turned green. I hired the best doctor. Too bad. But, Johnny, you come over and have supper with me. Pork chops. I get 6 extra for you.
Susan,
I'll be right back, Johnny.
Hey!
Oh,
hey, Pancho! Pancho, look out! They're in the window across the street! Pancho!
Johnny! Johnny!
Pancho!
Johnny!
You're hit.
Johnny!
Hey, get a doctor, somebody. Some water.
Don't, Johnny.
Pancho, how are you?
Not so good, Johnny.
You'll be all right.
It's pretty big news on Johnny. You make a big headline of it. Pancho Villa killed. Pretty good story, huh? Johnny, I'm lucky you were here.
Take it easy.
What a funny place to die. Butcher shop. Maybe you fix it up better in your story, Johnny.
I'll fix it, kid. It'll read great.
Johnny, do me a favor.
Sure.
I've been hearing what big men, what they say when they die.
You write something pretty good for me, huh?
I'll write it, partner.
Make it up now, Charlie, so I know. Hurry up, please.
I'll write about how Pancho Villa died with the medal that had once been given him for the rescue of Mexico, still around his neck.
And the ring. The ring he gave me. Don't forget Madera's ring.
I'll throw that in for good measure.
What else?
I'll write, from near and far, from north and south, the peons who had loved him came to see him as he lay. They gathered in silence, a tattered multitude kneeling reverently in the streets.
That's good, Johnny.
I'll write like this. Above the prayers of the adoring and stricken crowds rose suddenly the cracked voices of the old minstrels who had followed him in his great adventure. The thrilling strains of La Cucaracha rang out once more on the night air. Then suddenly, there was silence.
Yes, Johnny.
Pancho Villa spoke for the last time. They crowded round the dying hero.
Hurry, Johnny. What did I say?
Goodbye, my Mexico, said Pancho Villa. Forgive me for my crimes. Remember, if I sinned against you, it was because I loved you too much.
Thanks, Johnny. But tell me, Johnny.
Yes, Pancho.
What did I do wrong?
Now, John Barrymore's Napoleon and Arthur Caesar's prize-winning play, Napoleon's Barber. And in case you want to know who's playing the barber that does know Napoleon when he's seen, well, it's me. And I want to tell you it's a real honor to act with John Barrymore. Go ahead. There lived a barber who was a revolutionary poet. He hated the Emperor Bonaparte with all his might. This is the story of what happened when Napoleon himself, disguised as a private, came into the barber shop unrecognized. As the scene opens, the barber is dropping a razor and reciting his bad poetry to his wife.
Now, wait a minute. Josephine, will you please wait a minute and just listen to my poem, will you?
I heard it before.
Now, wait a minute. Just listen. Now, if Napoleon came into my barber shop, at nothing would I stop. I'd shave his beard, I'd cut his hair, and I'd cut his neck from ear to ear. If once I get hold of Napoleon Bonaparte, I'll cut off his head and his stony heart.
Some poor innocent client will be found here someday by the police, headless or earless, or both, if you don't stop being a poet and reformer of France.
Now, there you go, defending Napoleon.
I never said anything about Napoleon. I married a barber who told my parents he was the best in Dijon. And now he has become the worst poet in France.
No, a woman never understands. La Belle France is in danger. A tyrant is sapping its lifeblood. We must arouse the people of France
To look after clients, not chase them away with bad haircuts and worse poetry. Napoleon is not so bad.
I believe he's a devil.
Oh.
Oh, if I could have him here now, I'd cut his neck from ear to ear.
Oh.
I swear I would.
Oh, you villain.
Pardon me. May a tired soldier of France be shaved here?
Oh, why, come right in, my good friend. Certainly, gladly. Seat yourself. You must be very tired, huh?
Yes, I am tired. War is very hard work. Oh, for a rest. Without anxiety and fear.
Oh, it must be a hard life for you soldiers. Nothing to do but kill and avoid being killed.
You talk as if death were a thing to be feared. No, my friend. It is life which holds out the promise of tomorrow. Death is the messenger of yesterday. I know of Caesar and Rome, but what do I know of tomorrow?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. That's quite right.
Tomorrow you may be dead, poor fellow.
Is this a prediction? Do you read the stars by any chance?
Well, men are dying by the thousands. I hear strange stories of the blessing Napoleon, he who sent them to their death. But why, sir? Why, you are a soldier. You tell me why.
It's true. They bless him as they die. But why they should bless him, I can't say. I remember one, a messenger. It was the Daily French to Ratisbon. He was hardly 15, a mere child. I saw him shot through the heart, but still grasping his message, he saluted the emperor. God bless you, sire, he said. Your generals are victorious. Poor little devil. Why should he have died blessing Napoleon?
Why should all of these soldiers do it for a ridiculous little man? The emperor, eh? He's nothing but a tyrant sucking the life's blood of France.
You really hate him, don't you? You must know him well.
Know him? Know him? I certainly do. He beats his wife, hates children, insults his generals, kills innocent soldiers just for sport.
What does this monster look like who feeds on the blood of men?
Well, I should say he was just about your height.
A little taller, maybe.
No, just about the same as you. He's short and he has popping eyes that burn into you like hot coals. A big head like a cabbage. Sometimes he looks like an imbecile. And sometimes like a bloodthirsty monster whose compressed lips hide long teeth like fangs.
You know him very well indeed, don't you? A few mistakes in observation here and there, but for the rest, you know him like a poor relation.
Then you know him, too.
Not too well.
You served under him, huh?
I served for him. I was his bodyguard. I, his soul guard, too. For I saw to it that nothing got to him that could interfere with his cause for a moment. I knew that it was ever present, the germ of his own destruction in himself.
Then you were close to him? To Napoleon?
So near to him, I could hurt him with a word, a look.
And yet you are still a private. He gave you no advancement, the dirty dog. What was your reward from the ungrateful one, huh?
The reward? The harder I watched, the greater his warning to watch harder, more carefully. The smaller the danger, the greater was my carefulness. For fate, he would say, lurks in strange places. And destiny chooses strange moments for his practical jokes.
Did he ever say a kind word to you, the tyrant?
Yes, as a matter of fact. I remember one night he was very kind to me. He reviewed his entire life for me. We hadn't eaten for several days. And once we'd settled in camp, he ordered a full-course supper. He ate like a wolf. That night he was sick. He sighed and groaned and tossed about.
Oh, that he had died. What a blessing that would have been.
Early that morning, I heard him call my name. What is it, sire? I asked.
Indigestion, he replied. My worst enemy. Someday I shall lose all I have worked for because of my stomach. I have mastered all elemental passions and emotions, but my desire to eat. My damnable desire to eat. Then pointing to his stomach, he said, there lies the source of victory and defeat. There lies the fate of England and the world and Napoleon. Achilles has bequeathed me his vulnerable heel, and I have swallowed it. I would have relieved him of his misery quickly, the vicious dragon.
I think his ravening appetite is responsible for his nightmare.
No. It's conscience, my friend. How could one rest when he's responsible for the bloody deaths of thousands? Why, his heart must be as heavy as lead.
Nearly crushed, I should think.
What does he say in his sleep? What does he do?
He's usually weeping. He says, my generals lie to me. They betray me. They promise to bring me the hearts of 10,000 enemies, and I only get 1,000.
What? A snake. Oh, if I had him by the throat.
Then he calls the names of his marshals. May, he cries, bring me the Colosseum. Mira, spare no children. General, bring me the Pope's ring this noon.
The heathen. The devil. No respect for God or man.
Oh, I could make short work of him. I wish I were his executioner.
This isn't the worst. You know how fond he is of the Orient? Well, he has planned for himself a gorgeous Oriental funeral. He directs that his successor gather together 5,000 Frenchmen. They must represent every trade and profession. Mechanics, tradesmen, lawyers, doctors, and barbers.
Barbers?
Yes. These are to be killed and buried with him in Oriental fashion to keep him company.
Oh, what an idea. Oh, if I only had him here.
Seeing you so excited, my dear friend, about the trials of La Belle France, that makes me a little bit afraid that you might cut me as you shave.
No, not at all, not at all, no. I am the best barber in France. And besides, shaving has nothing to do with the revolution. I keep them separate. One is an ideal and the other a job, of course, you understand.
Except if, by any chance, you had Napoleon here for a customer. I suppose then the ideal and the job would meet.
Yeah. Say, you should hear my poem. I want to read it to you. It's a revolutionary masterpiece.
Mm, do you mind completing the art you have already commenced? The soap is drying on my face.
Oh, yes, yeah, the shaving. Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, but now listen. Just listen to this. If Napoleon came into my barber shop, at nothing would I stop. I'd shave his beard. I'd cut his hair. I'd also cut his neck from ear to ear. If once I got hold of Napoleon Bonaparte, I'd cut off his head and his stony heart. Say, in those funeral arrangements, are you sure he included barbers?
quite sure. One from every village.
Oh. I'm the only barber in Dijon. And if the man who shaves him only do his plans. Oh, if I were his barber. Oh, if he were my customer, I would give him his funeral.
What can a barber do to Napoleon?
Look, here. Just this. You see this razor? I could cut him right from ear to ear. Yeah, I'll show you what I mean. May I use your neck to illustrate?
It's all right.
I'll just use the back of the razor.
Of course. Well, I should trust so, yes.
Now, just one cut like this.
Right.
No more Napoleon. No more tyranny. And a barber is the savior of France.
True. A freak's throat of fate, and a barber succeeds where kings and emperors fail.
Now, almost finished. Now you look like a young bridegroom. My wife says she does not like me unshaven. It scratches her skin. A vain woman, my Josephine.
Josephine? Yes, Josephine. That's the name of my wife. The woman you saw here when you entered.
Josephine? Your wife?
Certainly, my good friend. Are you
dreaming? Certainly, my wife. Just wait until I stop the razor.
Strange what images the sound of a name can bring up. The mention of that name has driven from my mind the plans of empire, wiped from my will the ambitions of a lifetime. I'm one with any barber. Just male. Crowded with sentimental yearning of love and fatherhood.
Speaking to yourself, sir?
Old Josephine. Josephine, you are mine in Egypt. On the battlefield, in my tent in Italy. In victory and defeat. Josephine.
Pardon me, but have you ever heard Napoleon speak of his Josephine? Do you think that he ever gives a thought to her? No, the devil. I hear because of him, she's not invited to the drawing rooms of Paris. She's left lonely, the poor woman.
Yes, today they ignore her, but tomorrow they'll fawn at her feet. And like light, feed on the bounty and glory which she may be able to bestow upon them. Weep, if you will, my good barber, about the destruction of thousands on the battlefield.
Don't lose your kindness, sir. Perhaps it was because of her recent caprices with a young army lieutenant.
Lying leper. Slimy thing which lie awake in a still night, planning the destruction of the fittest. Vulture. Whose
claws dig deepest when one is most helpless. But they shall harm only the weak or great. Not the really great.
Hello, Father.
Why, hello, son.
Who's that you're shaving, Father?
Oh, just a soldier.
Oh, are you a soldier with Napoleon?
Yes, my little friend.
This is my son. This is Pierre. Now, you run along and play, Pierre.
I want to be a soldier with Napoleon.
Do you? Why? Oh, no. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
I like to fight, to sleep in tents, to march to the drum.
You may be a general someday.
No. Never.
My father doesn't like generals.
So I gather. Why, may I ask?
I don't know. He says they murder people. But Mother says they sometimes make real men out of what look like people.
That's true enough.
I can recite, too.
Oh, really? What?
Liberté, égalité, fraternité.
That's fine. Splendid. A good sentiment.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm at school now. Mother will want a reason for my staying so long after school is out. But I played war and won the battle.
Congratulations.
Bye, Father.
Goodbye, Pierre. Now, wait a moment, Pierre. Did you say that you won that battle?
Yes, the Battle of Dijon.
Come here, mon général. In honor of your recent victory in the Battle of Dijon, I bestow upon you the Medal of the Legion of Honor.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Mother, see what I... Look what he gave me.
But, sir, why, only he can do this. Give the Medal of the Legion. Who are you? Are you... Napoleon?
You've not quite finished shaving. My neck here, it's a little rough in spots.
Yes, and this razor's very sharp. It'll take but a moment.
No accident, my friend. This requires willpower. I cannot be the victim of accident.
No. But it may not be an accident.
No, I can't. I can't. You're too human. I can't. You are the emperor. Oh, forgive me. I did not mean to preach revolution. I didn't know that you were a man. I thought that you were a devil. Oh, forgive me. Please forgive me.
Forgive you? Listen, Barbara. You held the fate of France in your hand. I, perhaps the entire world. And you hadn't the courage to go on. That, Monsieur Barber, is the real difference between us. The will to power. I can forgive your revolutionary rantings. I love those who hate me. They prove my invincibility. I'm too vain to hang those that oppose me. But the next time you take the imperial name in vain to rhyme with an impossible word, you have my word that you will hang for it. Bonaparte. Stony Heart. Wash. What a foul rhyme. I can forgive bad shaving and revolution, but bad poetry? Never. Here. Good day, sir.
Josephine!
Yes.
Josephine!
Yes.
Do you know what has happened?
No.
I just shaved Napoleon.
He was Napoleon?
Yes. Think of it, Josephine. Oh. Think of it. I have been honored by the emperor. Lord.
Wonderful musical instrument in the world is the voice of Paul Robeson. But Paul Robeson is more than a great singer. As an actor, he scored a marvelous success in Othello on the stage and in many, many moving pictures. Tonight, we really want you to enjoy Paul Robeson, not just as a singer on the concert stage, but as a great actor, too. You'll hear him both as a singer and actor now. Paul Robeson, in The Drums Say War.
Paul?
Thank you.
5 years, there has been peace along the Congo. But now, from across the jungles, the war drums are sounding. And the drums mean that the chief of the Lobo tribe is calling to the Balus to join him in war against the fierce warriors of the North Country. When the news comes to the Balus and to their giant, peace-loving chieftain, Niabongo, played by Paul Robeson, he summons his tribesmen to a palaver downriver in an effort to avert war. But his people cry for war. Niabongo, in his magnificent canoe, travels downriver to the palaver. The men shout for war. It seems impossible that one man can stop the impending battle. But as his canoe approaches the shore, Niabongo raises his hand and speaks.
Silence! The drums lie. There will be no war for the Balus. For 50 moons have we had peace, and peace we will keep. We want no war. And on this side of the river, there will be no war. We have all we need. We have homes. Our crops are good. We have water from the great river. We do not need war. And war we will not have. Do you want your fathers and brothers killed? Do you want your wives and daughters carried away into slavery by the men of the North Country? Lobengula, have you forgotten the last time we beat the war drums? Have you forgotten your son? Shot through the heart by the poisoned arrows of the Acholi. If the warriors of the North Country cross our borders, then we will fight. But while I am chief, we will attack no one. Your wives and daughters will not be carried into slavery. Your sons will not be killed. Remember the law. We have had happiness with the law. We must all be friends. We must all work together. The Balus will have peace. Let us remember Changa, our great ancestor. Let us be strong. Let us be wise. Come into our canoes. Away we go. Away we go. And make it so. Sings a river rhyme.
folks. Almost every great singer seems to be identified with some particular song, and every time that you hear it, I don't know, it seems to sound even better than the last time. I know that you all want to hear Paul Robeson sing Water Boy, huh? You see, Paul? But first, will you just tell me something about Water Boy, Paul?
When you hear Water Boy, you should picture a group of laborers down south. They work all day in the blazing sun. With every group of men, there's a boy whose job it is to see that the workers get water when they are thirsty. Though tired, these workers sing to make the time pass more quickly. It's a tragedy when a laborer is desperate for water, and the water boy is nowhere to be found. You hear a man call, Water Boy, where are you hiding? If you don't come, I'm going to tell you. Yeah.